Thank you for taking the time to download and listen to this free podcast from Celtic Underground. You can subscribe and like and listen to your podcast wherever you pick up your podcast feed. You can also subscribe at theCelticUnderground.substack.com, where you will get email notification of new content as soon as it is out. And you can subscribe for free. There'll be plenty of free content, articles and podcasts. But also, you can pay a small subscription and you'll get extra special content. Anyway, enough of me. On to today's free podcast.
Hi all, and welcome to our latest More Than a Club podcast series on Celtic Underground. And tonight, I'm delighted to have the guys from Malahide CSC with us. So we've got Paul Tipper, and, well, below me in terms of when you see the Celebrity Squares edition, it's Sean's just below me, Sean Fox. Sean Fox is the chairperson, and Paul is the treasurer of one of the real newbies that we're having on here. So brilliant to see both of you. Thanks so much, Paul, and thanks so much, Sean, for coming on.
No bother at all. Thanks for having us
thank
on.
Thank you for the invite.
Yeah, it's great. It's great to have you. I've not had anybody from the old country so far. We've had everybody from blooming New Zealand to Pittsburgh. We've been all over the world, so it's good to have a stop off, you know, in the land of my forebears. And you guys, I say a newbie. I think you would say you're officially, but I'll ask you, I'll go to you so we don't all talk over each other with all that. So who wants to take this one up, Paul or Sean, about how you got started and how new you are?
I can take that. You want me to?
Yeah, go for it, Sean.
I suppose it's like many Celtic supporters clubs, you kind of have that initial period of not being an official supporters club, just a few people gathering to watch Celtic or watching the matches that go on, travelling to Parkhead. So we had a period of that. And then from an official point of view, this is only entering our tour season. So we have about two seasons as an official Celtic supporters club below our belt. And we had registered a couple of years ago with the Association of Irish Celtic Supporters Club. But we had been kind of meeting in Malahide for about 2 years previously on that and acting somewhat like a supporters club, but not really an official one at that stage.
Yeah.
But we still had, you know, a lot of work we were doing in the community and for charities that we'll hopefully discuss later on. And as Paul will be able to tell you as well, there's a good history of Celtic in Malahide that Paul's been involved in supporters clubs in Malahide since the early to mid 2000s.
Right. Paul, this great tradition then. I had to show my ignorance because I wasn't very sure. What part of Dublin is Malahide? Where are you in the kind of
so we're just
geography
in north,
of Dublin?
North County Dublin, so in between Swords and Portmarnock, so not too far from.
All right. Is that what was one of the places, the Celtic Tiger, and it was like the houses were like $750,000
yeah,
of it
like that,
25 years ago on the way to the airport. My pal comes from kind of Dublin and he used to tell me, I just couldn't get close to anything. He said it was like pretty much box rooms. It went kind of London way, didn't it? Like box rooms, like
that's
worth an absolute. Was it right? Yeah, I thought I'd maybe got a wee bit over that, but it was just a crazy period. But you've been involved, Paul, like the 2000s. So is there what's the kind of history of?
My sort of history, I started going to games when I was like 18, you know. There was a couple of lads in Malahide had season books, so started sort of going with them. I started college at that time. So we had set up a supporters club in college. I went into Maynooth University and we used to go halves with the university in Limerick. So Limerick would fill half a bus, collect us in Maynooth, and we'd fill half a bus and we'd just, you know, do the bus trips. What happened then was when I was trying to fill our 50% of the bus, you know, I would get in half, I would recruit a few lads from Malahide, you know, just to fill up the numbers, and that, you know, sort of went from there. So that was from around 97 through to sort of 2000s. I got myself a season book then, started going up, and there was a few guys from Malahide, similar boat. So, you know, we used to go to European games, Champions League games, you know, we did, you know, similar to what Sean was saying, you know, we applied and joined AICSC. You know, we'd do the annual, go to the dinner dance and stuff. So we had a nice little group of lads that was, you know, hang out and go to the games. And then, yeah, I suppose kept my season book for about 10 years. Ended up, you know, going over with another supporters group that I'm still a member of, Stephen White CSC. We, at the time, we had about, I think we had about 15 or 16 books between us. So we were going over regularly. Now, this group was spread out over Dublin, but there was a few guys from Allied still on that. You know, and then that sort of fizzled out. You know, you have kids and stuff and you give up season books because it's hard to go every week or every second week, you know. And then fast forward to now, John's got heavily involved and great at setting up where we are now. So it's great to have, you know, a group to go over together. We've got quite a few games in this season or last season. So we hope to keep expanding.
I mean, Sean, so, I mean, in a kind of way, use it, because a lot of the clubs I've spoke to on here, of course, they're kind of long-distance clubs. The guys for Christchurch are only coming over even every month or whatever, maybe once every 3 or 4 years for New Zealand. So they actually get it. But you guys, kind of half, kind of live, half, kind of, or, you know, quite a lot of like live experiences dotted between the kind of coming together to watch the games on the TV. Do you have your local, do you have a meeting point, like, do you have a kind of base now or for the club?
Yeah,
where you watch games or whatever.
Actually, that was one of the main points why we established as a supporters club. While Ireland has a very close connection with Celtic, and most of us would support Celtic, and like an awful lot of Celtic supporters clubs around the island, we do with kind of an Irish tradition in mind. It's almost like the roots of how Celtic were established. A lot of our parents, our grandparents would have spent time in Glasgow and picked up the Celtic tradition and brought it back to us and took us over to see games. So that is nothing new in the Irish psyche. But what we do have problems with sometimes is trying to get the matches on in pubs when the English soccer is on.
So right.
When we kind of first met, I suppose, as a club or an unofficial club after COVID, that was to the forefront of our thinking. It was almost like collective bargaining as a trade union rather than a supporters club. In that,
so that's a good Celtic tradition.
Yeah, exactly. We would be able to go into a local pub and say, listen, there's 10 or 12, can you put the match on, please? And we seem to get our way with doing that. So we kind of base ourselves now out of the GA club in Malahide, which is St. Sylvester's, and they have been really good to us in giving us time and giving us the space and giving us the facilities that we need to hold functions and put on the matches.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny you say that. I was over when my brother and sister decided to trace our roots just last year, and Celtic were playing, I think, in the Star Scottish Cup game against Partick Thistle. And we were, I think it was a big, there was maybe a big GA Sunday or whatever as well. So we went to the pub and there was loads of tellies. He says, can we have one telly? Just a wee, the tiniest one or whatever, to watch the game. And they're almost laughing at you. Would you want to watch that for Celtic playing Partick Thistle? You know, there was a Chelsea-Arsenal game was on as well. And then it was like people were kind of looking at you askance because you would even bother to watch Celtic. It's a strange dichotomy, isn't it, Paul, in a way, with the kind of, because I remember first going to Ireland with Celtic and Liam Brady was, I was at Celtic View, I was the editor. But 1991, Brady just become Celtic manager. We were over a tour in Ireland.
Yeah.
It was a mad thing. I remember Dundalk and all that, and all these guys climbed on. It was crazy. There were some nutty games involved in that as well. But we thought, oh, Ireland, they'll really embrace Celtic.
Yeah. No.
Liam Brady's the manager. And it was like, really, they're one of that. I'm not blaming anybody, but this whole idea that, you know, you'll no walk down a street corner without seeing like a Celtic jersey or whatever in Ireland, because it is that, as I joked about with the old country, it's not quite like that, is it, Paul?
Yeah, no, you're right. And you know, as Sean said, like we're lucky that Sylvester's have been great. Like they've never refused us, and they've always, even if there's big games on in England, they'll always tell us, you know, your game section. You know, before we had the club, you know, you'd have to travel into town or you'd have to look up, you know, where there's larger Celtic supporters club like Nish Porrick or the other guys, you know, that, you know, there's going to be a big crowd and they will show the games. But that tended only to be sort of, you know, when you're playing the Huns or you're playing big cup games, you know, that you get big crowds in. Whereas we want to go down on any night or Wednesday if you're playing, as you say, like,
yeah,
you know, you want to be able to go down and know that they're going to show the game. So we have built that relationship. So we do have, you know, a like unofficial clubhouse, if you want, that will allow us to show the games.
Great.
And difference, you know.
Huge difference. Sean, how's you found it in the last 2 years? I mean, do you kind of mix and match in the sense that you might get along once? You're saying you got along quite a lot, like last year. So how do you decide if you're coming to a home, if you can get to a home game, or think these are coming to a home game, or do you target it before the start of the season, say we could maybe go here and go there, or how does it work, Sean?
Well, we're quite lucky, as you had pointed out earlier on. We're in North County Dublin, you're quite close to the airport. So
yeah.
For those as Tavares Club, it's quite easy. Our only worry is the wife and kids.
Of course.
And actually, I told the kids, Ademar, Fia and Sneva, I'll give them a shout out.
They're all
big Malahide South supporters, members and
God fans. Bless them. God bless them.
Yeah, and I wonder, it's quite easy for us, and I do acknowledge clubs from all over the country travelling long distances. We're in the airport in 10 minutes, so we can go out that morning and we're home that evening on the last flight. So that helps us get over more often. I think last year we're probably over as a club maybe 6-7 times last year, including the cup final.
But, of course, right.
And like away from that, over the last 2 years, social media has kind of really helped us build awareness of the club within Malahide. So we get people come down from Portmarnock or Swords and Donabate. These are surrounding areas, and people in Malahide are aware of the club. So it has grown immensely, particularly for Scottish people who have moved to Malahide. They now have a place where they can come and watch Celtic and actually make new friendships as well, which is important when you're moving to a new country. So that's a very important part of our club, is that social element for Scottish people. And also for, we have a lot of elderly members of our club followed Celtic since the 50s and 60s, unable to travel. And, you know, it just gets them out of the house, gives them a bit of company, and they get to watch Celtic and have a chat and a bit of crack with us. So that social element is equally as important as young lads like ourselves going over to Brazen Heads and going off to a match. And, you know, so you have that element that are equally important as each other in our club.
Oh, yeah, as I said, I was speaking to the guys from Pittsburgh the other day, and they were saying this kind of sense of community, and it's like people making friendships or just finding that there's like minds that they never knew existed, because Pittsburgh's ASC, they're pretty new as well, last 5 or 6 years. It's amazing. It's incredible to think, Paul, that all these new clubs still springing up, because there's so much, and that's what I was saying to the guys in Pittsburgh as well, there's so many kind of rivals for people's time or people's kind of affections. And Celtic, because of the modesty of the league, because of the, like in terms of the kind of domestic setup, you know, like it's easy for, and I understand why, especially in Ireland, and I understand why the EPL's become, it's almost a form of kind of football colonialism, you know, it's like, it's become the world league, you know, and it's like a kind of colonially like taking over all these other leagues in the sense of people going directly there. So it's amazing to think that still these little new pockets of Celtic are springing up.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's, yeah, and I think it will keep doing that, you know, because we love following Celtic, so, you know, you'll find a way.
Yeah. And it's...
Andrew, just on that, because just what you're saying, just to prove your point correct, in terms of the commercialization or the colonialization of our game, we would have a few members now, and one of them is my brother-in-law, who was a Liverpool supporter for his entire life. But we have dragged him over now to a couple of Celtic games in the last year, and he's now a member of our club. He has his son wearing the Celtic tops, simply because he's getting a proper footballing experience from it. You know,
the interaction
with the fans. You know, we're dragging them into the Brazen Head before the game, into the Squirtle after the game. And, you know, even the football, the interaction, the accessibility of Celtic and that experience, you'd never be able to find that on Anfield. It's been too commercialised. So you're nearly dragging football fans into our club away from the English commercialised version of soccer, you know?
Yeah, because there's nothing inauthentic about Celtic, and you can't gentrify the kind of Celtic experience. That's like a... I was actually saying to the guys in the last podcast, in some ways, Celtic's popularity is kind of probably nosedived in the last 2 or 3 years. Queen dying and everything that happened with Palace, Celtic's response, Celtic Sports' response to the kind of genocide and all that. It's like people realise it's like it's no cuddly because it's real, because there's some kind of moral fibre there. But there's plenty of other people, especially in England, I just get this sense that they see Celtic is this kind of completely kind of renegade, kind of, or as Ross Desmond might say, anti-establishment or whatever. But it's like, that's the beauty of it. That's the beauty of it, because it's not like any other club, is it? And that's why I think people can come to Celtic. I mean, I didn't expect to meet as many people in this series, in the More Than a Club series. So they've just something about Celtic caught them. It wasn't through like me, like through your mother or whatever, you know, and through her father before that, you know, it's like there's a family lineage. It's just something that's captivated them about Celtic. And that's what makes it, like those pockets springing up, Paul, eh?
Yeah, big time. I mean, when I grew up, I wasn't brought up following Celtic. I used to just follow a couple of the English teams, following the Irish players. You know, I liked Liverpool at the time and they had a few of the Irish lads, and then Souness came in and sold a few of them and they went to Aston Villa and I used to follow them. My parents, we were lucky enough when brought me and my brother to an away Ireland match in Lisbon, of all places, right? In 95, I think it was. Yeah, 95.
95.
Yeah, it was a qualifying for Euros. We needed to win. We lost 3-0. Actually, George Cadete came on and scored. But anyway, you know, we went there for a few days and the amount of Celtic fans that were over, because it was in Lisbon and they were following Ireland as well at the time, you know, yeah. We got talking to so many Celtic fans from not only Glasgow, like loads of Irish, loads from the UK, you know, so we got chatting to them. And it was through that, me and my brother were playing pool. We're twins and we were playing with these two twins from Newcastle. Now they were about.
What, do you just play? Did you decide just to play twins when you were playing pool?
No, but no, these guys were about 10 years older than us, right? And they were quite distinctive lads. They were probably 30 stone plus each, right? So you couldn't miss them, right?
Right. Of course, we'll play you.
Yeah, so we were playing them, and they explained that they, you know, they were brought up living south, and they said, if you're following a team because of the Irishness, like, well, there's no better team than Celtic. And, you know, so I went home, started reading in about Celtic, you know, and thought the history was great. 3 years later, went to my first match. 5 years later, I'm over. I'm a season ticket holder and I'm down the Gallagate with my brother, you know, and who walks in? The two lads from Newcastle.
Oh, really?
You know, so it's nearly 10 years later and we meet them and we get talking to them again. Like, we were only teenagers the last time they saw us. So it's a good story anyway that it went full circle, and then we were traveling to games and meeting them in Glasgow then. So, you know,
incredible. So. And you've said, Sean, to me off air, not like, obviously politically it's important to you because you can't have Celtic without a political dimension. We've kind of mentioned there before about their solidarity with the Palestinian people in recent years and their kind of Republican anti-establishment kind of nature. And that's intrinsic to what the Celtic experience is. Even if some people would want to flush it out, but you can never have Celtic without having that, Sean.
Yeah, look, it's an extremely important part. As you were saying earlier on about Celtic being more than a football club and that kind of anti-establishment, it's within the DNA of the supporters. And I know the club are trying to get rid of them. Well, the board is trying to get rid of them, their DNA, but they're not going to be able to do it because, you know, it's so ingrained in our understanding of the world as well that we don't differentiate or separate them. And I suppose from an Irish perspective, there was always a close connection between politics and sport, even right from the establishment of the GEA and also...
No Garrison Games and all that. Yeah.
And even involvement with the IRB at the time, the Irish Volunteers as well, the connection with the language and the Gaelic League. And then you have the likes of Michael Davitt, who would have been one of the first founders and patron of Celtic. And sure, as we all know, he laid the centre spot in Parkhead. And what was his famous quote? A green sod in Donegal that will prove slippy to a Saxon rival who runs over it will fall a cropper or something along them lines.
It's
a great way of saying those who cross Celtic and understand the DNA of Celtic will eventually come around to our way of thinking, is what David was trying to say from that. So the politicalisation of the club and its supporters are very much grounded together as far as we would be concerned. And on that, as a supporters club, I mean, one of the fundamental important parts of us and our existence, even before we became an official supporters club, we were always involved in fundraising for Palestinian sports clubs. And a few of us have been, from our supporters club in Malahide, have been over to visit in Palestine and to meet with some of the local community groups, some of the local sports groups in Palestine, just to get an insight into life under the occupation and now genocide. And, you know, just to bring that home, to spread that message, tell that story, and hopefully not only our club, but other clubs in Ireland will engage in fundraising processes and awareness campaigns as well for Palestinian people and some of the sporting charities in Palestine.
When was this the whole issue started in October the 7th or whatever, but was this before the kind of, like that in 2023, or was it roughly around about that kind of time? Because, I mean, Ireland's really stood up for the Palestinian people in the face of, like, everything that's gone on in the last 3 years, the horrors of the last 3 years. Ireland hasn't been found wanting, as with Spain. But then it's people that know what it's like, well, especially Ireland, in terms of know what it's like to be, that they have the imperialist boot in your throat or whatever, you know?
Yeah, of course. There's always been a long connection between Ireland and from the 20s right through, and then obviously with the later stage of the conflict, and particularly in around the occupied six counties, you would have seen great level support for the Palestinians over the years. So, I mean, that itself is nothing new. So to help out in that situation of being able to see and bring, I suppose, stories home. For instance, I suppose we would have arrived into Palestine just before the October 7th. I know the CNN and RTE like us to believe that the conflict started then and not in 1947. Sorry, did I say October 7 initially? So we would have went over just before that. Now, my perspective of arriving into Palestine for the first time, my family would have came from Belfast. So I would have expected to see an occupation very similar to the military occupation we would have seen in Belfast, such as soldiers on the streets and harassment by soldiers, checkpoints, etc. And while we saw that, it was very much evident more so in the likes of Hebron, but not as much in, say, Bethlehem. But what I took back wasn't just an experience of a military occupation, it was something different completely that I wasn't prepared for. And that was the apartheid state. And it was the absolute control of every facet of the Palestinian life.
Yeah.
Like the experience of them controlling electricity. So if a community had a protest, they'll just cut the electricity off. You'll know the Palestinian homes because they'll have water tanks on the roofs, because they'll do collective punishment by cutting off water. They'll control the movement of people, not just through, you know, apartheid roads, such as the Palestinian back roads that we used to use. So, for instance, Bethlehem and Jerusalem was a short distance. You could do in about 20 minutes, but it would have taken Palestinians over an hour and a half, maybe more, go through several checkpoints.
Checkpoints, yeah.
And they control the movement then through visas, so working visas, movement visas, even going to medical visits. So every aspect of their human rights is being controlled, and that can only be described as an apartheid state.
Yeah. I mean, I was there myself 30 odd years ago, and it was just after they signed the Oslo Accord when we were supposed to be going to see. I had a kind of Jewish girlfriend at the time, so that was kind of awkward at certain points. But like, we were supposed to be in the two state solution. This is back 1994, but you could just, you know, it's insidious as you say. It's like and even the things that you read about the collective punishments, they'll bulldoze your house if your children are throwing stones or perceived, you know, things like this. It's frightening, and people think they don't have an understanding that these things, as you say, have been happening for generations. Yeah. And Paul, sorry, were you going to come in there?
I was just agreeing with John. I didn't get to make that trip, unfortunately, but you know, I remember when they came back telling all the stories, it was, you know, horrible to hear what actually is happening on the ground over there.
Yeah,
you know, people here don't. Even with the news and all since October 7th, right? It's you know, you're not you're not seeing what was happening on a daily basis beforehand, you know, until you get people like Sean and the others from the group that went over and, you know, telling you live what happened, you know.
Yeah.
Now, what I would say is that what you also take from it is a sense of community resilience, a bit like you would have seen, I suppose, in Ireland during the war, and also, I suppose, the Irish immigrants that would have arrived into Glasgow at the foundation of Celtic, you know, that level of resilience. And we would have seen that particularly in around the Ida concentration camp in Bethlehem, where you had the Ida Celtic and the Lajee Celtic, yeah. And the boxing clubs they've set up there, the community gyms and the outdoor facilities, just to get the kids out doing sport and, you know, something positive in their lives. And they're able to build education and community activism all around the sports clubs as well. So for us, as our Celtic Sports Club, that's why we thought it was fundamental for us to get back to Ireland and get fundraising and as quick as possible to help some of them sports clubs in Palestine.
And how does it work then? Is treasurer, like, how many sleepless nights do you have, Paul? I was treasurer in my Celtic Sports Club. I've told this a couple of times, but one time I was running, it was a Celtic Rangers game, and we used to get two double-deckers because you got as many tickets as you wanted. Back in the 80s, you know, when I was just growing up, I was just leaving school and going to uni and all that, and it was my hometown. And so I think we maybe got about 95 tickets or something for a Celtic Rangers game, and I wrapped up all the money from it, you know, on elastic bands. But I better run into the jungle. Yeah. Damn thing bounced out my pocket, you know. So it was like I was £700 down. But thankfully, my brother, he was the I was the ticket convener. He was the treasurer, and he kind of moved a few figures about, you know, before we got to the AGM.
Yeah, no, it's a lot easier these days, you know. Yeah. It's all through Revolut we don't at this stage, because we're an early club, we don't have the luxury of having a lot of season books. It's something we want to work on. You know, we want to try get a few season books and then share them among the group. And if people can go, if not, pass them on to others. So, yeah, we don't have that. So what we have done, we've had, Sean's mentioned some fundraisers. We've had three or four sort of events, let's say, over the last season.
That's good going.
Yeah, so Celtic, but pretty much when we're playing against Rangers, we'd hold, get music on. Sylvester's GA would give us a function room. We put the TV, we put the match on, and then we'd have some Rebels on after. You know, we do a bit of fundraising there. So yeah, I would just look after that and make sure the money stays.
The 1916 walking tour of Dublin for the fundraiser as well. Paul, Andrew might want to come along to next time we're organising that event.
I'd 100% recommend that.
You're more than welcome to come along to that.
Oh, wow. Look, I was actually in Dublin the other week to see David Byrne play. I was over with my wife and my brother and my cousin, and we went to the famous graveyard. I'd never been. I've been to Dublin quite a few times on and off over
Last
the years.
Lemon,
but, like,
Last
what Lemon. Was that? It must have been. It was like Maud Gonne. There was loads of kind of famous... I think Michael Collins' grave's there.
Yes, Glasnevin. Yeah,
Glasnevin.
Right, exactly. Right. A fantastic place, a fascinating place. Fascinating place, and just the sense of history. And you still, like, I think, I hadn't been in Dublin for a few years, and people had told me, it's kind of gentrified, and I know there's a lot of attempts at that. There's some places, and Glasgow's a bit like that. I still found that kind of earthy, kind of edgy, kind of element to it is in there, because you just kind of flush that away, because that is what is. I mean, it's just part of where these kind of cities are going to be. So I still found the kind of part of the old kind of Dublin that had been like nearly 40 years before. There's still remnants there, eh?
Yeah, there's a character and a charm to Dublin that I suppose you can't really gentrify out too much, because they're ingrained within the city fabric for so long. Now, listen. They are trying our best, and there's an awful lot of housing being knocked down by way of the older communities and flats and being replaced by apartments, usually solely built for the big multinationals from America, you know. So that has destroyed a little bit of the community and character around Dublin. But it's kind of being flushed more out to the outside. So you still get your communities, and a lot of them will still have Celtic Supporters Clubs amongst them. So there's still a lot of Celtic Supporters Clubs around Dublin. There's probably not as much in the city centre as there used to be, the more probably spread out around the suburban areas, which right. probably is just a result of the gentrification of Dublin over the years.
Well, of course. But I mean, is it weird, Paul? Because like Irish people, I used to get kind of annoyed. I used to feel it was when I was Celtic Yeard and all that, there was almost like a sense of entitlement and a sense of, oh no, we're the real, we're where it all originated from, us Irish Celtic fans. You know, you all it is. And I felt that. Maybe that was just because, I don't know, because they were writing me letters at the Celtic View. But there is that sense of kind of, not just a belonging for Irish people in Celtic, but in Celtic, there's an expression for Irish people. So it's that both belonging and expression, who owns your identity. So there's that kind of idea that like Celtic do owe their identity to Ireland. I mean, there's no two ways about it, because without those influences, it wouldn't be the club that it is. It just wouldn't be the club that it is. But with that, it's now flipping in a certain way. There's a certain resentment because you've got this billionaire owner. You know, yeah. like it's a kind of weird, there's weird all these different influences that are impacting on Celtic and Ireland.
Yeah. But
in some ways, this is as Irish as it gets. You've got your last two, well, Nancy was a permanent manager, but I suppose it was only 33 days. But if you think about it, O'Neill after Rodgers, essentially, two periods of Rodgers, you know, if you think of the last decade, and all the while you've got your kind of major shareholder. I know he's not the owner, but he seems to be allowed to act with that. He seems to be his de facto owner. You know, so you've got this, like, the Irish strain. It's rarely has it been more pronounced than it is now, but it's a kind of... I mean, Dermot Desmond, God, you talk about a guy that's, like, shaped Dublin. His tentacles are all over there, aren't they?
They are, yeah. Yeah, I mean, he doesn't relate to a lot of the fans, you know? But he's been around so long, you know, he's been in behind the scenes for so long, and it's you know, I don't think it's going to change how people support Celtic, right? You know, we have our own beliefs. We're not going to turn to the way he wants us to be, you know, or, you know, he probably...
He's setting his dogs on you.
Yeah, his dogs after me. You know,
there's a sniffer hounds in Dublin to go around to see if anybody's saying any bad things about the Desmonds.
Now I can't hear the dogs are barking.
The dogs in the street know.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But yeah, I don't know. He's beginning to ruin the club a bit, right? And people are getting pissed off with Desmond, right? So I think we're all on the same page there. He's not going to change the core Celtic beliefs, you know. So
I think the likes of Desmond, they're not really tapping into an Irish connection. They seem like tapping into an Irish well, where it's kind of more pronounced for money purposes. So you build up that connection with Irish fans and also Scottish fans that like to have the Irish connection. And we see that, like, even with the constant release of the St. Patrick's Day kits, and get green, white, and orange, something, you might sell some more kits. So I think in a lot of circumstances, from Desmond's perspective, he's tapping into Irish connection for money making processes, but none of that money seems to be getting put back into the club by way of putting players on the pitch at the moment.
No. But I say, you guys outside of Celtic, you know, I take it non-football people over in Ireland, because he is one of your main oligarchs, if you like. He's a kind of behind the scenes. Somebody sent me something last year and he was moaning about the tram system, because he was moaning about the spend for the tram system, because he said nobody's going to be travelling anymore and all this, and why the hell, as these oligarchs do, they don't want anything that's a kind of public ownership or anything for this benefit of the wider public. They're not interested in it, because it's all about private, your capital. You shouldn't be using public money for the public, it seems to be, you know. So he wrote this rant and letter to the Irish Times or whatever about the money that was spent. I tell you, you've got a tram system on.
I walked past the trams today and they were totally rammed, you know. So they are being used, you know.
But he's a figure in kind of political life in Ireland. Even people that don't follow football would know Dermot Desmond over there, eh, Sean?
He certainly have his influences politically and economically, and I'd say he would have his fingerprints at an awful lot of development around the city and future development around the country, all right? And it's going to be beneficial to himself and I suppose the rest of people like him who, as you were saying, is looking for privatization of you know, public transport. And once it's privatized, the investment gets reduced and the prices go up for profit. So we've all seen how that works. And that's currently where Ireland is heading at the moment under the influence of people like Desmond. And I'm sure he has his shares in plenty of these companies.
Oh, no, definitely. Right. And as I say, he's been around for so long. I mean, he's still got his offices there, hasn't he? He's got a big office, famous office kind of block, hasn't he, in Dublin? I was supposed to go and interview him for the Celtic Opus, you know, that big book they made, that huge, big gold leaf book and all that, because I was doing an interview with him.
You won't be getting interviewed now, Andrew.
No, he wouldn't give me one now. No, he definitely wouldn't. He told me the time, in fairness to him. He said, if you're a journalist, and he said, if I wasn't having to do this for the sake of Celtic, he said, I wouldn't give you the time of day. At least he was honest about it, you know, like, didn't make any bones about the fact, I'm only doing this because it's incumbent upon me. And he wanted to be in the big book, so you're in the kind of history forever. You know the one I mean? The foyer, you have to put on gloves to read it. When it came out, it was £1,967. And they said to me, you can get paid or you can get a copy of the book. And I went, I want the money. I don't want that book. Like, yeah. I can do something with the money, you know, get paid for the interviews. No, it's like, I think, but yeah, I heard, Sean, I think you said to me, you've got 35 members, which is pretty good. That's a good kind of sound. It's a good sound base.
Yeah, and it sort of grew throughout the year. So as the season went on, you know, you had more people inquiring and more people coming down to the club. So we're just opening up for membership for next season, and we're hoping to get, you know, an increase on the 35, you know. I think we'd be pushing close to 50 now.
How do you work it in the sense that because you're a kind of hybrid club, because you're not all just sitting around the kind of screens or whatever, you're going to the games, do you have a membership, and then does that help out if people go to the games, or do you have, like...
Well, at the moment, the membership is quite light, so what we do is, you know, we use the funds to put on gigs, and then the money we get back is sort of used for the next one, and then we donate, obviously, anything over to the charities. So, I mean, the long-term goal would be to get a couple of season books, you know, and then you could, you know, have reduced costs of going over to games and that. But like, since we have joined and members, we've helped members get tickets through the likes of the AICSC, which end up being a bit cheaper than buying them directly through Celtic, because you're basically borrowing or getting lends of season books off other clubs.
Of course. No. Right. Is it quite good to set up there in terms of the kind of...
Yeah, I mean, every game we've gone to, Sean's gone to more than me. I was only at 3 this season. We've all got tickets, no problem, mainly through other clubs. I don't think we had to buy any direct.
Right.
Sean might be able to confirm that.
Sean, and for that, like, kind of the kind of hybrid kind of nature of it, like, all said you were at a few more games than him last year. Is that the hope, again, that you can get over once a month or something?
Well, the one thing that we wanted to keep the focus on in our club as well is that around Dublin you would have had a lot of amalgamations of clubs into one club, and that takes up a larger geographical area. And we kind of wanted to move away from that. We wanted to kind of something that's a bit more akin to what you'd see in Scotland or Glasgow, where you just have the small community having their own club. And even if the small club, who cares, you know, like, we don't need the 200 member. We're happy with a 35 just representing the local and giving them somewhere to watch again. So, and as well as that, like, you talk about sports clubs around Dublin, like, might see, you might get like, so Finglas, or you might get a Portmarnock, and then say, geez, we can do the same and establish your own sports club. And sure, if it's only 20 members or 30, whatever it is. And what I would say is that if you have got a club like ourselves that's quite small, it would be important to affiliate yourselves with the Association of Irish Celtic Supporters Club. And they have been brilliant to us, you know, and we've kind of got involved with themselves in the work they do for our clubs all over this country. It's phenomenal. And then, like, a small club that wouldn't have season tickets, it gives us an opportunity just to apply and say, listen, 3 members is going over this weekend. And you wouldn't necessarily have to do it with the association themselves. They just have, you know, WhatsApp groups, such as a Leinster WhatsApp group, and there's clubs all Leinster, and every single club is just willing to help you out. If they have a spare ticket, they're texting you saying, we have one. Another club might text and say, we have one. Before the day is out, you'll have 3 tickets that you need from 3 different clubs. So if that support network is extremely important for small clubs like ourselves, or hopefully if other new clubs like ourselves start to establish.
Well, that's amazing. And it's good to hear, because that's the whole thing. You're supposed to feel part of something bigger. And we initiatives like that, or when you can do that, you can have that kind of connection with others, then that's when you do feel part of a bigger supporter group, don't you? You really feel part of something. The whole kind of Celtic-minded kind of fraternity, isn't it?
Yeah, no, of course you do, because again, you could be rambling down to the GAA club and you might only get, you know, a Wednesday night game. Not against Motherwell, because there's a few down for that one, but you know, during October, and you might only
They were like Real Madrid for us. They were like Real Madrid for us last season.
Same seven or eight people down from our club. So, you know, there's a wider network just outside those 7 people sitting with you. And again, not just from ourselves, from the other clubs in the association. It's great for their own fundraising for charities as well. There's always someone fundraising for cancer charity or Laura Lynn charity or Palestinian charity, and we'll all just help each other.
Brilliant. Well, like I was going to say, you know, like upwards and onwards and bigger, but to you, like, it seems to be the little guy. I can tell, Sean, you're a man for the little guy. So like, be whatever size you want to be, and it's amazing.
The trade unions my whole life.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's why I ended up getting booted out the Scotsman after 25 years, because I led them out in their first string 34 years. My wife said, by the way, you're fucked, Andrew. Next time they're making redundancies, your name's on it.
You're right, yeah. All right.
And 3 months later, she was proved right, unfortunately, but there you go. But then this wouldn't have opened up to me. So, like, God's got a plan for us all. I'm sort of amazing to speak to you guys. Thanks so much for making the time for me. And all the very best, any future endeavours, Paul. And if he's are over, like, look me up. Like, I'm always at the games anyway, you know. Paul, Sean.
We will. We certainly will. Yeah.
God bless you. Yeah, thanks so much.
It was a pleasure to be on. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Bring me sunshine in your smile. We hope you enjoyed that podcast. There will be more along soon. Please share the joy of Celtic Underground. Rate us wherever you can find us on your podcast provision, and also subscribe to thecelticunderground.substack.com. As you'll be aware, there are 2 types of subscription. There's free subscription, where you get a certain amount of content delivered directly to your email address. And then there's a paid-for subscription, where you get even more content delivered directly to your email address as and when it comes out. Anyway, enough of me. We hope you enjoyed the podcast, and this is me, Harry Brady, saying good night and God bless. Good night.
Bring me sunshine in your smile. Bring me laughter all the while. In this world where we live, there should be more happiness. So much joy you can give to each brand new bright tomorrow. Make me happy through the years. Never bring me any tears. Let your arms be as warm as the sun from up above. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love, sweet love. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love.